Our guest today, and personally speaking, is Dr. Bill Baker. I think one of the finest people in public life, certainly in media that we're liable to know, and someone who is profoundly, wonderfully Catholic. Stay with us. Welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti, and Dr. Bill Baker joins me now. Bill directs the Bernard L. Schwartz Center for Media, Public Policy, and Education at the Graduate School of Education, Fordham University. He is also the President Emeritus of WNET 13, New York's public television station and America's flagship public broadcaster, where he served a 21-year tenure. As a commercial broadcaster, Bill helped start many cable networks, helped launch Oprah Winfrey as a talk show host, and was involved in the early stages of launching both the Discovery Channel and the Disney Channel. He was president of Westinghouse Television and chairman of Group W Satellite Communication for over a decade. Bill is the recipient of 7 Emmy Awards and 2 Columbia DuPont Journalism Awards. He's the executive producer of the theatrical films and PBS documentaries The Face, Jesus in Art, and Picturing Mary. Bill holds a bachelor's degree, master's degree, and PhD in communication sciences and organizational behavior from Case Western Reserve University. He is believed to be the 8th person in history to have stood on both the North and South Poles, and he's also a lighthouse keeper at Henry Island in Canada. Bill is married to his wife, Jean Marie, and together they are the parents of 2 adult daughters. He's here with us today to talk about his life, his career, his family, and the Catholic faith, and the Catholic values that mean so much to him. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome back to Personally Speaking our dear friend, Dr. Bill Baker. Now, Dr. Bill Baker is our guest. I'm delighted to have Bill back on the program. Bill, this is going to sound like an unusual question, but every day, probably like a lot of people, I read the obituaries of the New York Times, and it's all these articles about very impressive people who had amazing lives. And what I'm always struck by is at the end when they say, you know, there was 1, there was 2, there was 3, there was 4, there was 8 marriages, usually multiple marriages. You have accomplished great things as one of the most important Catholics in media, no doubt about it. And I don't know, are you in any way disappointed that your obituary will mention only 1 wife?
Well, I'm not too disappointed about that. First of all, I don't know that I put myself in the category of one of the most important media executives who's Catholic or media people, but I do put myself in the category of a lucky guy with a marriage now that is it, and it really doesn't seem very old. A 54-year marriage. I married Jean Marie when she was in nursing school in Cleveland, Ohio, where we both grew up, and it was actually I mentioned it to Jean Marie, and I've said it publicly before. I actually made the decision back then, which is something you never hear anybody talk about today. I said, you know, my faith is important to me. I mean, I wasn't a crazy wacko Catholic or anything, but I said, it's important. It's kind of where the center of my universe. I said, I think if I'm going to get married, I should marry a Catholic girl. Mm-hmm. And Jean Marie was definitely that. Now, again, she's probably even more liberal than I am, but her dad was the president of the Catholic Press Association and the editor of all the Ohio and I don't know, some other states, Catholic newspapers. Mm-hmm. Worked for the bishop in Cleveland, who wasn't always the easiest guy to work for. And I used to joke about that because this was a bishop who had a title of bishop archbishop. So okay. That you knew right away he really knew how to play politics in the Catholic Church, because right. Cleveland is not an archdiocese. However, he became an archbishop.
right. Well, what about her is it that made these over 50 years possible? What's Jean Marie got that makes the marriage work, aside
well,
from you?
I guess the simple answer is you know, as my grandchildren say, granny demands respect. You know, and that's really important. And two, she is always, you know, even though we've been married for a very, very long time, as I say, it doesn't seem that long. It feels like I've, had been married to a bunch of different women, because she's always changing and, something crazy is happening that you don't expect. And that's just the way she is. She's not a stick in the mud. She's very, and she's very much the real thing. You know, she's, there are no hidden agendas or tricks. So it's great. And one of the things I like most about her is that she never, ever cared about money or prestige or any of those things. Just cared about the right stuff. So, she's a pretty good lady to be hooked up with,
Now, Dr. Bill Baker is blessed to have not just his wonderful wife, but also two wonderful daughters and grandchildren and granddaughters. And I mentioned all that because I wonder, and a lot of folks who are grandparents and parents watch or listen to a program like this, have you and Jean Marie ever figured out what's the best way to teach the values that you treasure to the kids that you love?
Well, that's, of course, somebody might know, but we don't. But I guess our view is that just example is the best bet. To our grandchildren and children, they all know that we care about our faith. We care about values, that we are not pious people, but we are serious about God's work. And I think example is probably the best and only way, certainly, to teach a generation like that. It is interesting that in our case, and it seems to be very typical these days anyway, in such a incredibly secular world, one of our daughters married a Jewish fellow and is basically Jewish. And our granddaughter on that side, who's now at Georgetown, studying theology, I might add, but might become a rabbi,
Wow.
And then the other daughter is a very serious and active Catholic. She, like my wife, is also a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and in her case, a hospice nurse, cares for the dying people. And both of her girls are very serious Catholics, which we enjoy. And of course, when we go to see them in Virginia and Reston, we go to their church and are hooked up. And so the answer is, but we're proud of both of our families.
Mm-hmm.
We're proud of their faiths, their high values. And whether that was us as showing example or not, I don't know. It's hard in a culture like this. Everybody we know at our church, their children and grandchildren, they just don't go to church, and then you say, what's going on here? Why is this? And the answer is nobody seems to really know. The press of secularism, the church itself, but it's not just the Catholic Church, it's all churches. And now with this pandemic, I don't know really any church, there may be, but I don't know really any church that that has gotten its full congregation back in the pews since the pandemic. How is it at your church?
Happily, they have mostly come. You're right. Some will never come. We have Mass online every day, and for a lot of old-timers and those who are frightened of still stepping out, it's a way for them to go to Mass. So there'll be days where there'll be anywhere from 4,000 to 8,000 people watching the Mass online, which is comforting. On the last Sunday, for Easter Sunday, the church was packed again. And when I thought back to the days when we were restricted to 200 people allowed in church because of the virus, it's a very hopeful sign. But let's stop there for a second in terms of being Catholic. Over the 30 years I've been doing this, I interview a lot of people who identified as Catholic. And I always get my heart breaks a little bit when during our conversation they say, well, I was raised Catholic, and then there's a but. And then for one reason or another, either the church has driven them away or they've just lost interest. But for you and Jean Marie, you believe in God. That's fine. But why Catholic, distinctly Catholic, as a choice for you?
Well, I mean, in my case, of course, I was born, although my father was not a Catholic.
My
mother and father back then had committed to raising my brother and I as Catholics. My brother is, he's in Cleveland still, and he is what I would call a serious Catholic.
Right.
So it was, you know, in our DNA, we were raised that way. But for me, the church has given me a lot of personal strength. I don't know. I like being a Catholic. I've always liked being a Catholic. I even wrote an article about it for, I was asked to write it for America Magazine, saying, you know, being in the media, what has being your faith meant to you? And I said, well, it's given me a lot of strength. It's given me a lot of personal identity. And for kind of a poor kid from Cleveland to be able to meet everybody, every powerful person in the world, and feel confident that I can talk to them. Why? Because I know that in God's eyes, we're all equal. That, you know, this person, because he's a lot richer or smarter than me, doesn't make him necessarily better in God's eyes, you know.
Yeah, I like that very much. Now, you just mentioned in passing, but I don't want to let them pass by the important role of your parents. When you look back now as a parent and grandparent, what did your parents do right in raising you?
Well, I think everything. You know, I mean, I owe a great deal to my parents. Both my mother and father, both very poor people, mm-hmm. both people who never finished high school.
Yeah,
you know, and here I am with 10 doctorates. Both people who you know, were poor and kind of. My dad worked in a factory in Cleveland. My mother worked in an office. They both were. I was almost a latchkey child. They both were working, and you know, I'd come home to an empty house. But their goal was. They said, "Look, we don't have any money, but we're going to work really hard. If you want to get out of this kind of life and not have to live the way we are, you're going to have to get an education." So they did everything they could to get me an education. What was that? They didn't have money. They couldn't send me to an expensive college, but they sent me to, they found a kind of a lousy house that they fixed up in a very good neighborhood, a suburb of Cleveland that had very good schools. So I went to very good public schools, and then I paid my own way through college, through the best college by far in Ohio, Case Western Reserve. And I was able to pay my own way, and with some scholarships and teaching assistants and all that stuff that I got there, all the way through a PhD. So, you know, when I came, I don't know if people can do that anymore, but I did, all the way from entering college to a doctorate. And it was the love of my parents, the support of my parents. When I was very young, I loved radio, wanted to get into that business. My dad helped build a radio studio in our basement with his own hands, you know, and it was incredible. And we got interested in TV because we couldn't afford a TV. But I never forgot, I was, you know, like 8 years old or seven. My mother would take us in a wagon and haul us up, my brother and me, up to, in the middle of winter, up to this store that had television sets in the window that we're on. And we'd sit there and look at it. And both my brother and I wound up going into TV, probably for that reason.
Isn't that something? God bless Mom and her wagon.
Yeah, you know, she was something.
There's a book written about Dr. Bill Baker, and I just want to focus on one thing. In the title, it says, A Life of Ambition, A Life of Service. When we think of people, Bill, who are ambitious, we tend to think that they need to be cutthroat and push other people aside. But one of the things that you've written about and spoken about, and it's a theme in your life, is leading with kindness. And anyone who knows you, and I count myself among those who've been privileged to know you over the years, knows that you are innately kind. And I'm just wondering how to balance ambition to get ahead, which some people sometimes think means stepping on others, versus the Bill Baker way, which is, I'm not stepping on others, I'm going to lead with kindness. How to achieve the balance?
Well, I mean, I think a couple things. First, you know, I don't know that I'm really I've been running organizations now for 30 or 40 years, so I have a lot of experience. Have I always been a kind leader? I don't know. My guess is I haven't been. I'm as flawed a human as anybody, certainly. But I do know the research, and I do know what works. Mm-hmm. And I do know kind leadership over time is really the only way to go. And we've studied this, Michael O'Malley, who is my co-author of Leading with Kindness, and Every Leader is a Artist, and we did another book recently published by Stanford University about corporations that succeed, organizations for people, which basically shows that yes, there are some real SOBs that succeed, but for the most part, people who are kind are going to get the most out of people.
Before we went on the program with Dr. Bilbrecht, he mentioned a couple of years ago, he first of all was embraced by a massive heart attack and came close to almost checking out. But thank God for his doctors, he was given a reprieve. Why do I mention that, Bill? Because I'm always wondering when people have feared something like a near-death experience. I don't know if we're ever ready, but did it change your perspective on whatever life we have left? Were you frightened at the prospect? Were the things that you regretted not having done once you realized this might be the end?
Well, let me talk about this, Jim, a little bit. I've actually had four near-death experiences.
Oh, God.
And so I figured three was enough, you know, and then I figured if there is going to be a fourth, which this heart attack was 2 years ago, that'd be the end of the show. But it turns out it wasn't. But the first one was falling in a 2,000-foot crevasse. I didn't go all the way to in the Antarctic when I was filming there. This was 30 or 40 years ago. The other was a head-on collision in Germany with a truck going, you know, at high speeds. And I fell asleep because I got ozone or whatever it is, you know, that kind of poisoning that you get from a gas.
Right.
That had leaked into the car. And then I had a blood disorder that was given to me by two medicines that coalesced inside, and blood is coming out of my hands like stigmata. And I was told by two doctors in New York that I had 1 hour to live. And they said, we have called an ambulance to take you. You need an immediate blood transfusion. I said, well, if I need a blood transfusion, I got 1 hour to live. I mean, you can't process something, a statement like that, too quickly. I said, I'm just going to take a cab. And I went and got in the cab in New York, and I told the cab driver, I said, I've got an hour to live. Get me to the emergency room at Columbia University Hospital as fast as you can. If you do, you're going to get a hell of a good tip. If you don't, you're going to have more paperwork than you've ever seen before, because I'll be dead in the back seat. Well, he got me there very fast. My wife was there. Anyway, I was there in the emergency room 2 days until they sorted that out. And then this last one was this heart attack that was 2 years almost to the day. And it was a big one where I was told later I had a 13% chance of survival. Now, the answer to several of your questions when you bring all this up is, now I've had a lot of experience with near-death stuff. And right. The answer is with none of them, maybe because they were all sudden. I don't know. I mean, it wasn't like you got a year to live, you could think about it. No. It was instant. I was never frightened. That's where I'd say your faith really kicks in. Yeah. I mean, I figure, you know, I've been leading this life for a long time. I figure, well, I'm leading this life this way because I expect something after it. Right. So I said, well, here it comes, you know. And it really never frightened me. But the only thing that does bother me after all these experiences, you know, you say, geez, I should have been dead four times already, and I haven't been. Why am I not leading a better life? You know, why am I not, you know, why haven't I given up everything I have and, you know, working and saving the poor or doing, you know,
right.
But I'm, you know, I still worry about the same stupid stuff I've always worried about. You know, I still feel as competitive as I think, what am I out of my mind? So I haven't really figured it out, except to say that I certainly have no fear of death, but I feel like God was always kind of kicking me in the pants saying, get your act together. And I don't think I ever did.
Bill, you know, often in church, I'll say, you know, don't be into mañana, domani. Someday down the line, I'm going to tell the people that matter in my life that I love them, or I'm sorry for what I've done wrong, or how much they mean to me. Have you said to the people who are dearest to you everything that needs to be said?
I'd say pretty well. Yeah, wow. I'd say pretty well. And I also do say, but this didn't take near-death experiences to do it, I always say thank you, as I have to you, you know, yeah. And we even wrote that in this little book about me, that, you know, I mean, some people have had, many people have had profound effects on my life and have done special things. You're one of them. And I have to say that saying thank you, you know, some people don't want to hear thank you, but I don't care. I say it anyway. And I say it often.
That's a great thing to do. Now, I got to go to something else that's in that little book about you. Could you explain to the people who listen and watch a program like this? Dr. Bill Baker is a very healthy man in many ways, mentally, socially, spiritually, but he is also bipolar. And Bill, can you explain to my listeners what I mean by calling you bipolar?
Yeah, I think, I certainly am. and I'm bipolar because I've stood on both the North Pole and the South Pole. That's right. What makes me bipolar. and by the way, too, that gives me kind of a lot. I mean, I did it because, you know, I think I was 16 years old. And because of, you know, the economics of my family, the furthest I'd ever gotten from Cleveland was Akron. You know, that was it, you know. And I'd always dreamt of great adventures and all, and there was no greater adventure you could have than a polar experience, you know, going to the North Pole or the South Pole. Only a handful of people. We believe, at least I say it, that I'm the eighth person in the history of the world who's been to both poles. Yeah. I mean, stood on the poles themselves. And it's cold, and it's cold, and it's dramatic. So that's a part of my shtick. And you know, if I walk into a room and I get nervous about something, I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, am I up to this? I'm thinking, well, who else in this room has ever been to both the North and South Poles? I said, well, here I am, you know. It gives me a little bit of strength.
Dr. Bill Baker is our guest. Our program is focusing on a lot of aspects of his life, but here's a tough question. I don't claim to believe anybody has the answer, but whether I'm talking to a church group, Bill, or a secular group, I'm always aware today more than ever that being somebody kind of pretty much in the middle, you know, I mean, I do read every day the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and find the truth someplace in between. But I'm always conscious with the church groups that I'm talking to some people who are militantly anti-Pope Francis and others who love him. And when it comes to the country, I know that in a parish like my own, which is I would say in many ways Trump land, that I'm dealing with people who are going to have questions about anything that's not far right. I've spoken to other groups where they're far. Do you have any hope, or do you have any ideas on how we bring it together, how we stop the division, whether it's in church or society? You're an observer of people. Is there something we're missing in terms of coming to a common ground of understanding?
Of course, I think about this all the time. By the way, I am a great lover of Pope Francis and respect him greatly, and am grateful that he's at the switch of the Catholic Church. I don't think that is an easy job at all. I've been wanting to interview him with not much success. I don't know why this world has become so polarized. You know, don't forget, I was close friends with, and he was on my board, Walter Cronkite. 80% of America trusted Walter Cronkite. If Walter said it, it was the truth. And by the way, Walter Cronkite was every bit as wonderful as his image is. He was the real thing. And why we don't have that today, that's what made, I think, America great, was that we were all kind of together. Now we are so fragmented. Part of it is the new technology and all of this stuff. You know, some people are only going to be able to see us on this, or, you know, everything is so fragmented.
Final question. Anyone who Googles Dr. Bill Baker will say, oh my God, he's constantly going, he's teaching, he's speaking, he's writing, he's doing a million things seemingly at once. But I got to ask you a final question. Where does Bill go to be unbusy, to be serene. Where's your safe place, Bill?
Well, I guess I have two of them. One is my local church. Mm-hmm. People are kind of surprised when I tell them I go to daily mass, because not many people do, but Jean Marie and I do. We love our little chapel in Greenwich, Connecticut, at our church, St. Catherine of Siena. And the other is a place that where I really veg out and am really disconnected in every respect is this remote island in Canada, Henry Island. You can look that up, henryisland.com, where we have a lighthouse and a lighthouse keeper's house. No electricity, no running water. It's a very remote spot, 4 miles offshore. And we go up there and spend a month, a year up at that place.
I think that's great. I'll swim over anytime. It sounds terrific. I want to thank Dr. Bill Baker for being on our program. You know, it's been my experience, Bill, that I hate to say this, but among people both in the church and larger society, that sometimes they start to accomplish and they believe they're pressed to such a degree that they forget who they are, where they came from, and what truly matters. And anyone listening to this interview and knowing how sincere you are and what you say knows that you know who you are, you know where you come from, you haven't invented a life that isn't your own. You're the real thing in so many ways. And I know because you're a humble guy, you'll debunk that when I say it. But I think one of the most refreshing things about you and why I love having you on many times is just you know who you are, and you're grateful for every person and gift that has gotten you to where you are. And what a remarkable thing that is. If what you have could be experienced by all the leaders in church and society, how much healthier we'd be spiritually and otherwise. Thank you for being Dr. Bill Baker.
Thank you, Father.
As we end today's program, I want to thank you all for being with us. If you need to contact me, you can reach me at personallyspeakingpodcast@gmail.com. We're also on Facebook at Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti. We're also now on Instagram at Personally Speaking Podcast. I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer, Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.